If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
You are listening to station WGN.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is exciting, isn't it?
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Dave Fire! WGN.
The whistle of a locomotive, the rumble of steel on steel. In Chicago, trains aren't just a mode of transportation. They're part of the DNA of the city. After all, Chicago's been America's railroad capital for more than 150 years. In this new 60-minute special, Riding the Rails, lifelong train enthusiast Jeffrey Bear hops aboard to tell the story on how railroads shaped our city. Along the way, he uncovers clues all around us to railroads of the past, recalls the colorful characters who built them, and the unsung workers who toiled on them, and reveals why our current rail system remains just as vital to Chicago's existence today. Riding the Rails with Jeffrey Bear premieres on Monday, April 13th at 7 on WTTW and the PBS app. And my buddy Jeffrey Bear joins us in studio. How are you, sir?
I'm honored to be your buddy.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. I know our radio listeners can't see this, although we're recording this as well on video, but you love the views out of this building,
oh,
right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know me. I'm like, you know, a lot of my work on WTTW is about architecture.
Yes, it is.
You know, we're here at Illinois Center with this, you know, glass and steel studio, corner studio with the beautiful view of the Chicago River and a bit of the lake there and Streeterville and, you know, NBC Tower and Tribune Tower.
And who designed our building here?
Well, I don't know if Mies van der Rohe specifically designed this building.
Yeah.
One and two Illinois Center were definitely came out of Mies van der Rohe's office. He was dead by then. Mies is the, you know, he came from Germany,
yeah.
Became the head of architecture at the Illinois Institute of Technology and is really the father of, you know, the glass box.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And this is a glass box and the site plan for all of Illinois Center here was done by Mies's office. I don't know if his office specifically designed this building or not.
I remember you were very bothered when you first walked into this building and saw what they did to the columns inside the lobby. You're like, mm-hmm. He'd be rolling in his grave.
Oh, God. You know, he'd say, God is
You're
in the
purist.
Details.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
very much
absolutely.
So. They're a little bit re-engineered or you know, modernized.
Yeah, you don't modernize good architecture like that, right? Your first tour was the Chicago River Tour. I think it was 1995.
On TV, yeah.
Yeah, on TV. What number is this documentary? You got to be getting close to 50.
I don't know. I mean, it's been 30 years.
Wow.
And we, at one point, were doing, you know, these shows take better part of a year to
make.
They
do, yeah.
And we were doing as many as three in one year, like simultaneously. So, and we've done the River Tour three times because, you know, things change after 10 years. WTTW can't rerun them anymore.
Right,
we've done
right.
The L multiple times.
Yeah.
We've done the Lakefront multiple times. So I've kind of lost count, but yeah, it's certainly.
It's getting toward 50, I'm telling
probably,
you.
Probably,
yeah.
It's certainly more than 40 these hour-long programs.
What inspired you to do the train? I mean, after all this time, you said 30 years, you're hitting the train.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've covered railroads and streetcars mm-hmm. and things in a lot of my shows on WTTW. And, you know, I would get calls and messages from the rail fans out there, oh, you ought to do a whole show about the railroads. And I always kind of thought it was a niche audience. But I don't know, about a year ago, a little more than a year ago, my boss, Shelley Spencer, was, you know, outside my office in a huge bookshelf with all these Chicago books. And she had just randomly pulled one off the shelf that said, hey, you know, did you know that Chicago had the largest cable car system in the world at one point? You ought to think about doing a show about railroads. Bing!
Yeah, done.
You know, I'm like, well, you don't have to ask me twice because I'm a huge train fan. I've always been a big fan of trains.
Yeah.
She was like, I'm like, really? Okay, let's do a show about the rails.
But like as a kid in Chicago, like, did you take family trips on the train? Did you just enjoy watching them go? Because I lived by O'Hare, so we loved watching the planes take off. We were by the trains, so it was interesting to see the commercial trains versus the passenger trains. It was just kind of a fascination as a kid. Was that same thing for you?
100%. Yeah. I always loved trains. And I grew up, actually, until I was 10. We lived in Highland Park, right like one house away from the what was then the Chicago and Northwestern. Now it's the Union Pacific Metro North Line. And my mom says I would run to the window every time a train went by.
Sure.
I was totally in love with them. I loved trains. I had, you know, a Lionel train, which I actually still have. I had a big HO train set in the basement.
Me too. And it was actually on ping pong tables and then another table my father, but it just kept getting bigger.
Yeah, mine was 12 by 8, a big L-shaped table, and and I had a layout, and you know, I built a little village and a railroad yard, and I crawled under the table and poked holes, and you know, we had little grain of wheat light bulbs in the houses.
Oh, wow.
And,
that's cool.
You know, little trackside signals and things. And
think about what our kids do now and on their phones and on the digital media compared to what just brought us simple joy.
Well, there's some like crazy great things that you know, young people can do.
I guess,
you don't really see that as much anymore.
No.
Train set. And then there's, you know, we start the show, actually. It's Riding the Rails on WTTW coming up on April 13th. We start the show at the Choo Choo restaurant in Des Plaines, Illinois. So that was, for me, like a pilgrimage when I was a little kid. The Choo Choo restaurant, for those who don't know, is a luncheon counter, basically, but your food is delivered to you on a model train.
Yeah.
So the train comes out of the kitchen and roll, you know, and it goes around the lunch counter and back into the kitchen. And
birthdays are a big deal.
They stop it right in front of you with your hamburger, your grilled cheese, whatever,
and your cupcake.
And
if it's your birthday.
And you get to go. The cupcake has a whistle on top.
That's right.
But when I mentioned to my dad, who actually is 105 years old.
Happy birthday to him, or congratulations. Wow.
I mentioned to him that I was going to do this show about railroads, and he said, well, you ought to have the Choo Choo restaurant in there. And I was like, oh, my God, that's where we have to start the show. And
that's awesome.
So that was because we went there when I was a little kid, you know.
Ditto.
And Ditto. So the owner, people say this all the time to the owner, apparently. You know, they show up with their kids. And they say, you know, I always came, not always, but last time I was here, I was a little kid. And the owner, his stock answer is, how do you think I stay in business when people come only once every 50 years?
I love it. I had an aunt that worked for Soo Line Railroad. So I'd go visit her at her office and so forth. I know it was spun into the Wisconsin Central, now part of Canadian National Railway.
Oh, you know more about this than I do.
But I remember because that's when she retired. She was there for like 40 years. And I have so much Soo Line stuff and playing cards and really cool stuff. She collected all that train stuff. So I'll have to show you that one of the. I should have brought some of that here today.
That's cool.
But there's also a place outside of Chicago in Minneapolis. It's called The Depot. And it was the office for the Milwaukee Road, and the Soo Line was right down the street, and now it's a hotel. So what was the offices has all this train memorabilia in there. Very fast. My youngest son absolutely loved this, but it was the Depot. And I knew they took the Soo Line building in Minneapolis where my aunt used to go. It's all now luxury apartments, much like the Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
You know, where great business was made is now where people are, of course, living. You mentioned the Choo Choo is where this begins. You know, we just moved the Broadcast Museum across the street from Ogilvy. I've never taken the train to work, ever. Even when I worked in the city, never hopped on the Metro. I can't live without it now. Especially in this traffic, it's 18 minutes
absolutely
from my house to across the street from the museum.
WTTW is on the northwest side, but when I'm working downtown, which I do maybe once a week, I come from Evanston. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like 23 minutes and you're right downtown.
Yeah.
It's the greatest.
Easy, clean, love it.
Yeah.
And the booze caboose. Did you see this thing in Ogilvy Station when you did your thing?
No.
It's a... I've only had a drink there once, but it is packed from like 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock.
Oh.
There's got to be, you know, 80 to 100 people like all inside the having a beer before they go home.
So Ogilvy, for those who don't Ogilvy know, station, is the end of the line for all the Union Pacific lines, like the Metra, Union Pacific North Line, Northwest Line, and West Line all come into Ogilvy. The other Metra trains come into LaSalle Street Station and Union Station, of course, and also Millennium Station.
And you talk about the Metro like it's the tentacles to the entire city and into Wisconsin. I mean, are all connected.
Yeah. So the show starts on a Metro train after the Choo Choo restaurant in Des Plaines.
Right.
We hop on a Metro train with the transportation librarian from Northwestern University, who's this wonderful woman.
Wow.
Just so cool, Rachel Cole. And she brings all these kind of historic photos and other kind of artifacts. And we talk about the heyday of the railroads, of cross-country passenger rail travel, where Chicago was at the center of everything. And all of those Metro lines, almost all of them, are what's left over of those cross-country lines. You know, you would hop on the Chicago and Northwestern, and you'd go up to Minneapolis, or out of Union Right. Station, you'd go to New York, or you could go to L.A. from LaSalle Street Station. And, you know, now cross-country rail is Amtrak, and all out of Union Station. And it's growing, actually, nothing like it was in the heyday. But the Metro lines run on those tracks, you know, just out to the outskirts of the Chicago region. We had 6 rail terminals in Chicago, more than any other city in the country. And because we were the rail capital and the center of the railroads in the country, you basically had to go through Chicago.
Sure.
You almost had to go through Chicago, and the thing that's crazy about it is that none of these stations connected with the other. So if you were going, say, from the West Coast to the East Coast, it would be like today, if you were trying to fly across country, you would have to land at O'Hare and then go to Midway and fly out of there.
Yeah.
So there was a taxi service that did a great business of shuttling people from one station to another. People, the great gossip columnist from the Sun-Times, Irv Kupcinet, would send taxis down to the train stations because the Hollywood stars would have to get off the train, and he would give them a ride over to the famous Booth 1 in the Pump Room restaurant at the Ambassador East Hotel in the Gold Coast. Yeah. And they would, you know, he'd interview Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart and, you know,
and grab him right from
Elizabeth,
the train.
Elizabeth Taylor people that younger folks have never heard of. But you know, all these great Hollywood stars.
Yeah.
And then they'd go on their way to the East or West Coast from there. And, you know, Rachel, this transportation librarian, has these wonderful collections at Northwestern of like vintage menus in the dining cars. The food in the dining cars was first class food, you know, but also some of these menus are from the late 1800s, right? And so, you know, it's things
worth
like
serving. Yeah.
Well, it's like venison and turtle soup, you know, and
things like that.
It was pretty funny. And so, you know, that's kind of the first chapter of the show that's riding the rails on WTTW. It's sort of the first chapter is about the whole heyday of the great rail, you know, passenger rail, including the Pullman story. And, you know, George Pullman invented a new kind of sleeper car in Chicago and, you know, basically hired recently freed enslaved people as the porters. And right up through the end of the heyday of cross-country rail travel, porters were still black on the trains. You know, it had become a kind of a cliche. Maybe it was one of the places where black people could easily find employment. They were still, you know, it was pretty much servitude.
Pullman was a community, like many companies had. I mean, you know, the church was there, the grocery store was there, the homes were there, you lived where you were.
Oh, in Pullman,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a lot of pride among the Pullman porters. They also created the first black union in America. We talk about all this in the show, and actually we go out to the Illinois Railway Museum, which is an unbelievable place in Union, Illinois, and I interviewed a historian there on an actual Pullman car.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, we go out for a ride on a Pullman car
and
talk about that history.
Very, very cool.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
The Chicago World's Fair, 1933, the Zephyr Streamliner, which you can see at the Museum of Science and Industry, but that was a big deal back then.
Yeah, so that was the Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy. After the age of steam, the railroads were competing for these really high-speed diesel trains that they called streamliners. And actually, the early streamliners were not as fast as these steam engines had gotten very, very fast. But the Zephyr, they did a stunt for the 1933 World's Fair in Chicago, where they did a dawn to dusk run from Denver to Chicago in one day, from dawn to dusk, and the train arrived at the World's Fair having, you know, done that entire trip from Denver, and I don't remember what it was, 12 or 14 hours, like at speeds up to 90 miles an hour, and it's very futuristic looking train. And the Zephyrs ran for a few years, replaced by more conventional looking, you know, high speed diesel trains eventually. But, that Zephyr train is in the ground floor of the, Griffin Museum of Science and Industry, as we now call it.
Exactly. I'm going to ask you, you were a train enthusiast. How much did you learn from this experience? I mean, you must have learned a lot, or did you know a lot about some of
this? I have always been kind of a train geek, so I mean, I did know a lot, but I learned all kinds of things. One of the things the first part of the show is all about, as I've been saying, the glamorous passenger rail era, and then the Pullman porters and things, Great Migration, which, you know, the Illinois Central brought African Americans to Chicago in the Great Migration. But the second part of the show is about freight. And this is like a parallel universe that most people just aren't even aware of. Mm-hmm. You see a freight train go by. Mm-hmm. But if you took away like the streets of Chicago and replaced them with where the rail lines run, you wouldn't even recognize Chicago. It's like a separate Chicago running in kind of a parallel universe. Everything in your house, your whole life is influenced by freight.
Of course.
And there's this big roaring industry of freight that most people are just completely unaware of. So you've heard of shipping containers.
Absolutely.
Now
use
this new kind of containerized shipping where, you know, things coming from China will come on enormous container ships, you know.
40% of our business came from China when we were, because I ran a retail fixture company. So
there you go.
Metal and so forth. So it would come into California and then we'd make sure it got on the rail and got to Chicago.
Yeah, and so then the containers.
It's the only way.
Right, the containers come to a port, maybe in California.
That's right.
they are not unloaded. You don't have longshoremen doing that anymore. They're just taken as a whole container and put on a train.
Right.
And then the train gets going, and the same container becomes the back of a semi-trailer truck until it gets to you, and then it gets opened. So Chicago is one of the biggest container ports in America.
We
cite the statistic in the show. I'm sorry I don't have it right at hand, but there are certainly more than 10 huge container yards in Chicago. There's one down by Midway Airport where we went, and I got on a thing called a gantry crane, which is basically six stories tall and six containers wide on wheels. So this is like, it's like this giant thing that drives around.
Yeah.
And I got in the cab with the guy who runs it, and we went, you know, they got lifted up about six stories over above ground. And then he was like lifting containers off of like 20-ton containers off of a train and dropping them onto a chassis where they were attached to a truck. And this is going on 24 hours a day.
Wow.
364 days a year. They don't work on Christmas. They're not Scrooge, I said. And it's this hidden in plain sight, just tremendous part of our economy that most people are just totally unaware of.
I also saw you, it looked like an operations center of, was this the multi-billion dollar, decades-long project, easing freight and passenger train things that you were doing when you were controlling traffic and doing some other things I saw?
Well, no, that's two different things.
Okay, tell me.
The untangling the roadblock was this project. It's an acronym. It's called CREATE.
Okay.
Can't tell you exactly what it stands for. And again, that's something that's going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. It's a multi-billion dollar project, and it's going to take 40 years. But because Chicago is the capital of rail in America and the center of rail in America, we're also the biggest traffic jam of rail in America. And if you're a metro rider, you often hear the dreaded, we're delayed by freight train interference. Because freight is so important and the freight lines own the rails that Metra leases or gets permission to run on, freight trains get priority. So it's a big headache for Amtrak because you'll be on an Amtrak train and you'll get from wherever you're going to, 20 miles from Chicago, and then you sit there for 45 minutes because freight trains are blocking you. So this program called CREATE is spending 40 years and billions of dollars to build bridges, tunnels, overpasses, underpasses, so that trains can move freely without being blocked by each other. And we went down and filmed this 3-mile-long bridge that they're building down on 95th Street, down near 95th Street, which is the largest rail intersection in America.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. And I mean, just trains were going by constantly going by. And of course, this one stops and then that one stops and then they clear this one and the other one goes. And so that was just awesome to see what they're doing at that location.
That's amazing. You also visit, we were talking about the Zephyr at the Science and Industry, the steam engine pioneers at the Chicago History Museum. You explored that as well.
Yeah. Well, it was a bucket list. I didn't drive that steam engine because that's just a museum exhibit now.
Right,
bucket list, I get to drive a steam engine at the end of the show. They have steam engines at the Illinois Railway Museum.
Oh, yeah, you were saying. Yeah.
So, the very first locomotive in Chicago, 1848, was this little, puffer belly, little engine that could, third hand steam engine, which they delivered to Chicago on a sailing ship called the Pioneer in 1848. And the first rail line ran from roughly right across the river from where the Merchandise Mart is now, west to about Oak Park or River Forest. It was called the Chicago, the Galena and Chicago Union Railroad. It was supposed to go to Galena. It never made it all the way to Galena.
Okay.
And the rails were made of wood, and then it had a strap of metal laid on top of them. It's called strap rail. And it's 1848, Chicago was,
innovators. I mean, we were,
we were, I think kind of late with railroads, at that point, but we were a big canal town because the canal had opened and between the lake and the river and the canal that got you to the Mississippi, we were a big center of commerce. Well, the canal opened that year, 1848, but by that point, the plan to build the canal from the 1820s to the 1840s had made Chicago the fastest growing city in the world. And so the railroads came to Chicago the same year.
Okay.
But it was a very modest railroad, this little Galena and Chicago Union. But within very short time, within just very few decades, rails were coming into Chicago from everywhere. My father-in-law, my late father-in-law, who's from St. Louis, said that they really blew it because they didn't encourage the railroads the way Chicago did, and you can see the difference in the two cities even today.
Wow. You also kind of go outside the traditional rail line. You talk about cable cars, trolleys, buses, and the L system as well, because it is part of the rails.
Yeah, so that's the third part of the show, is about transit, basically. Mm-hmm. Do you know what a cable car is?
It was powered from wires above, and there was like a almost like a pulley, some kind of system.
Okay,
on top.
So that is
Am I
what?
Right?
Nope.
No.
That, so so you people.
We're doing trivia, people, and I already blew that one.
People confuse cable cars and trolley cars all the time.
Okay,
a trolley car, which is later technology, is electric and it has a motor. So you have a pole that attaches to an overhead wire, which is an electrical wire, and that powers the motor in the trolley car, which runs down the street, right? A cable car, it has no motor. It's being pulled along by a constantly moving cable underground, like between the rails. There's a slot. And they have these in San Francisco to this day. The driver throws a big lever forward and it pinches the cable underground and starts pulling. The cable's constantly moving.
Okay.
And it's like a rope tow at a ski resort.
Okay. You know? Oh, yeah. Okay.
The cable car just grabs onto this moving cable under the rails.
When it's ready.
When it's ready. And if you want to stop, you just let go of the cable and apply the brakes. So you have these big buildings all around Chicago that were called powerhouses. One of them was later Michael Jordan's restaurant on the north side. It's now a steakhouse owned by a different company. But in these powerhouses, you would have these giant steam engines turning big giant spools of iron cable, right?
And all throughout the city.
Yeah, they were all around the city.
Wow.
Another one is now a Union Hall in the West Loop.
Okay.
And the cable would be turning constantly, and it would be fed under the ground right between the rails. And that's how these cable cars. And, of course, you know.
Is any of that left anywhere? Is there any pieces or parts of the system?
All over the place. Well, not operating.
Oh, right.
But, you know, down through the decades and the century, you know, they would be excavating the street and they would suddenly unearth, you know, a giant pulley that had helped the cable turn a corner or something like that. And of course, so the cable cars were replaced pretty quickly with the advent of electricity.
Sure.
By electric trolley cars. And we unearth relics from those all the time, because a lot of the trolley tracks, they didn't bother to tear them up. They paved over them.
Right.
Not very long ago at all, in Lincoln Square on the northwest side, they were doing a big road rebuilding project, and there were some, you know, old trolley tracks that they unearthed, and it just went viral on, you know, Instagram. People running down and taking pictures of the trolley tracks.
Wow!
And we were lucky that they were doing that while we were filming our show, so we have a bit of that in the show.
I don't know when it was, the 70s or 80s, when they were tearing up State Street, when it was kind of an open walk out there, and there were cobblestones, there was rail, like you see all of it. Mm-hmm. When they started tearing up the streets, I was fascinated.
You'll find wooden sewers. You'll find wooden paving blocks. One of the other things they found in Lincoln Square when they unearthed those tracks was also wooden paving blocks, because the streets used to be paved with wood blocks, not bricks.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. And then you also explore, you know, there's abandoned rail lines and what happens to them and hiking trails and so forth.
Yeah,
right?
So that's a big part of our show. The idea of a rail trail, like when a line gets abandoned and they convert it into a bicycle or walking trail, like the Illinois Prairie Path out in the western suburbs, or the Green Bay Trail on the North Shore, that idea was invented in Chicago by a woman named May Thielgard Watts, who was the educator, the nature educator at Morton Arboretum. And she fell in love with walking paths in Europe and didn't see a way to do that in America. And then she noticed that the old abandoned Chicago Aurora and Elgin Electric Railroad was out there. And she thought, what if we'd tear up the tracks and turn it into a walking path? And it took a lot of a big political effort for that to actually succeed, but it did.
All right, Jeffrey Bear is new WTTW specialist, Riding the Rails. We're going to do some trivia here. Let's start the music. It's always fun to do this, but I'm just testing you on your rail history, which I know you're going to do well because you just did this whole special. So
we'll see. I don't know.
All right.
If we got any rail fans listening, I apologize ahead of time.
Okay, here we go. All right, which railroad helped make Chicago the nation's primary rail hub in the 19th century? Was it the Baltimore, Ohio, the Illinois Central, or the Southern Pacific?
Well, Illinois Central, I would say.
Of course, yeah, yeah, I got that, of course. What year did Chicago become the largest railroad center in the United States? Was it 1830, 1850, or 1860?
Well, that's tough. It certainly wasn't 1830 because the first railroad came here in 1848. But I would say maybe 1850.
1860. 1860 on that one. All right. Which famous station opened in 1925 and became a major Chicago rail terminal? Was it Grand Central, the Union Station, or Penn Station?
Well, Penn Station's in New York.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, it would be Union Station.
It's Union Station.
But it's an interesting note because we did have a Grand Central Station in Chicago, which is long gone now. It's around where River City is now on the south branch of the Chicago River. But we had a Grand Central Station in Chicago.
I did not know that. I did not know that. All right. Which railroad line connected Chicago to the Gulf of Mexico? The Great Northern Railway, Illinois Central, or Union Pacific?
Illinois Central.
Yes, it was.
That's the old City of New Orleans, you know, the song made famous by Arlo Guthrie, but written by Chicago and Steve Goodman.
You're going to know this one right off the bat. Which major event in 1871 disrupted Chicago's rail network?
Major event in 1871? A little fire that we had on October 8th, 9th, and 10th,
yes, exactly.
1871.
And
actually, what's interesting is the rails were not as disrupted as the rest of the city. The rails were there and were able to get back into operation fairly soon after the Great Fire. The other really interesting thing about the Great Fire is the Illinois Central, which you've mentioned a couple times. You know, most of the railroads came into Chicago from the south because, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise you had to build bridges, you know, across the branches of the river. And all the rails were trying to get into Chicago as it was booming. And so the city did sort of a deal with the devil and allowed the Illinois Central to come right up the lakefront because our lakefront was eroding. And so the Illinois Central this was pre-Chicago Fire. The Illinois Central agreed to build a seawall to protect the lake from erosion in exchange for being allowed to come right up the lakefront. The deal was actually done by Abraham Lincoln's famous debate opponent, Senator Stephen A. Douglas.
Wow.
But it came into downtown Chicago on a trestle about 100 yards out in the lake. So, you know, Millennium Park, none of that was there yet. But if you were standing on Michigan Avenue, you looked across a kind of stagnant lagoon and at a railroad train on a trestle parallel to the shore, which was ending at right where we're sitting right now, ending at a big railroad yard at the mouth of the Chicago River. So after the fire, they shoveled up all the ashes of the Chicago Fire and threw it into the lake, which filled the land from Michigan Avenue out to the train trestle.
Right, right.
And that's Grant Park today. So if you're in Grant Park today, and of course the tracks are still there, the Illinois Central tracks, it's now Metro Electric and South Shore Line, it's sort of down in a trench, but the tracks are still there. If you're standing in that part of Grant Park, you're walking on the ashes of the Chicago Fire.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Last question. Including the choo-choo, how many train restaurants still are in the Chicagoland area?
I don't know for sure, but I know there are at least two.
Okay. There are eight total. There is Two Toots Train Whistle in Glen Ellen, Two Toots Train Whistle in Bartlett, the choo-choo, of course, the All Aboard Diner in Downers Grove, the Junction Diner in Forest Park, Chessie's Restaurant inside Historic Railcar in Barrington, and Wynn Hill Pancake Parlor in McHenry, and Tyler's Tender Railroad Restaurant in Schererville, Indiana.
Well, so are these all restaurants where your food is served to you on a model
but
train?
It has a train theme.
Train theme. Yes, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I know there are at least two where the food is served to you on a model train.
Yeah.
But
I think
the two. And now you're going to get phone calls from the other five train restaurants
that I missed.
That you missed.
That I missed.
Well, what about, well, yeah, it's not really there anymore, but the Roundhouse Restaurant in Aurora. is okay. was Walter Payton's. It's something else now. It's,
okay.
But it's built in an old, the inside of an old Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy roundhouse okay. in Aurora.
Okay. Okay. All right. You always have great additional things that you put together with these specials on the website as well.
Oh, yeah. So all of our shows on WTTW have websites that expand on the material that that we have in the show. And of course, you can watch the show there or any parts of the show. So if the show has already debuted on on April 13th, Riding the Rails, you can go to WTTW.com/RidingTheRails. And see all kinds of additional content as well as the show itself.
Riding the Rails with Jeffrey Bear. You can watch it on WTTW.com, WTTW itself, and the PBS app. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Oh, my goodness. This time just flew by.
It always flies by with you. Thank you, my friend.
Fantastic. Thank you.